You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey, I'm Steve Chiatakis, and today we're taking you somewhere in LA County. I can't tell you exactly where, because what's going on here isn't exactly public. But I can tell you this, we are in the mountains of LA County, and the reason it's all hush-hush is because we're here for an ayahuasca ceremony. Ayahuasca is a psychedelic drug associated with indigenous Amazonian spiritual practices, and it's been catching on here in Southern California. Now, all kinds of psychedelics are back in a big way. For the past decade or so, they've been rebranded as a wellness tool. Some cities have been decriminalizing them even, starting in 2019 with Denver, Colorado. Now, even the entire state of Oregon. Not LA, though, so this ayahuasca ceremony is on the down low. Shh. Fortunately, reporter Courtney Kosak is going to take you inside, and she's going to tell you about the good, the bad, and the potentially very ugly side of psychedelic mania.
To get into an ayahuasca ceremony, you have to know someone. But the thing is, you probably do know someone, even if you didn't realize you run with that kind of crowd. You get a referral from a friend, pay a couple $100, and you're in. That's what worked for me. A couple weeks before the ceremony, I received these instructions. Disclose any medications. That's because ayahuasca can pose a serious risk if you're on certain meds. Bring toilet paper, pillows, and blankets. Wear comfortable clothing, preferably white. Why white? Well, some commenters on Reddit say white is a sign of enlightenment. It keeps the evil spirits away. I'm not so sure about that, but a friend said his first time trying ayahuasca, he made the mistake of wearing a starchy collared shirt like he was dressing for a job interview. So I opt for light-colored athleisure wear instead. You gotta feel comfortable puking your guts out. Because yeah, all I know for sure is I'm probably gonna puke my guts out. Ayahuasca is famous for the purge.
The biggest growth I've gotten so far is getting over the fear or reluctance to want to be throwing up or in a room full of people where people are throwing up.
That's Jay, talking about what he got from the ceremony we both attended. You'll hear more from Jay later, and that's just his initial, by the way, not his name.
Okay, it is Friday evening, rush hour basically.
When the night finally comes, I drive deep into the mountains.
Okay, turning in.
Excited and nervous.
Awesome. So now I'm gonna go in. Happy trip to me.
I feel like I could puke just walking in the door. Our fellow seekers tonight, there are about 20 of them, aren't druggies or burnouts. Most ayahuasca users don't even consider it a drug. They call it medicine. Many of them have been here before. Tonight, there's a pilot, a barber, folks who suffered from PTSD and sexual trauma. Some people are even here with their parents. There is a lot more gray hair than I was expecting. What are they doing here? Well, one told me that psychedelics have helped her before.
You know, I made the decisions to go to grad school and to move to California, all of these based on psychedelic experiences where I needed sort of reassurance from the collective.
And Jay wanted to shake things up.
After I went through a divorce, I was like, you know what? I don't want to stay within these parameters. I want to push my boundaries out and I want to take chances and I want to be different in relationship and I want to be different in my life. I want to be different in my work.
I have to leave the recording equipment behind. Fortunately for you, because yes, there is going to be some serious retching. After sharing our intentions, we each go up for a little cup. Drink together. It's disgusting. Ayahuasca tastes like motor oil and dirt with a harsh, bitter sweetness that reminds me of how coolant smells. For the first 10 minutes, it's silent. Then someone vomits. The first of many purges to come. And purging isn't just vomit. It comes in many forms. Here's Dr. Jeff McNary, the chief medical officer at Rhythmia, a luxury spiritual resort in Costa Rica that offers ayahuasca retreats.
That can be vomiting, going to the bathroom, sweating. My favorite is yawning. That's a purge. I love that one.
Slowly, a cacophony of bodily noises escalates, and all of a sudden, pupils are dilated and we are high. The music kicks in. There is definitely an interplay between the music and intentions and the medicine, and sometimes it's hard to tell where those intentions are coming from. Here's a fellow seeker we'll call A.
You sort of get on the same wavelength because the music is playing the whole time. That is your rhythm. That is the rhythm of the entire room. And so you start having thoughts, but you don't know if your thoughts are coming from you or coming from the music. It felt like the music was responding to my thoughts and other people in the room. And I think it's vice versa. I think the music's dictating what it is and people are responding to that emotionally, and the medicine allows you to do that.
So everyone is on the same wavelength. I feel my usual cynicism melting away. I go to the bathroom to purge, and on the way, I tell a grown man dressed in head-to-toe white spandex that he looks luminous. I want to tell everyone how special they are. I start to wonder, who am I? This is exactly what Jay came here for.
What I'm trying to get to is a place where there's what they call ego dissolution.
Ego dissolution is a key feature of the psychedelic experience. It's an ecstatic state where you drop your boundaries between yourself and the outside world.
I definitely feel like a connection to the other people in the room who are going through it with us. I feel like we're all part of the same neural network.
But this oneness, this vulnerability and openness that ayahuasca users are commonly in search of is also where things can start to go off the rails.
When you go into these spaces, there is such exuberance and there is such excitement and there is such a shared sense of community, because when you're engaged in boundary dissolving drugs, how could you not feel at times at one with your comrades and confidants and friends who sit in circle with you every few weeks or months? And, you know, these are the people that you show this piece of yourself that no one else gets to see. And yet, like, that exuberance, I think, frequently overrides the whispers and murmurs and concerns, like that gut feeling that tells you maybe everything isn't sunshine and rainbows.
That's Dave Nichols, a producer and co-host on the New York Magazine podcast Cover Story Power Trip. He and his co-host dove into the dark side of ayahuasca. And yes, there is definitely a dark side. There have been allegations of rape, sexual abuse, and other misconduct that have undermined some of the research and institutions at the forefront of this so-called renaissance. What makes these allegations worse is that many people seeking this type of treatment are already vulnerable. Here's McNary again.
A lot of the people that come to see us have sexual trauma, and they're working on that through the intentions that they have. And it's just like horrible to have a sexual violation experience while you're under the influence of plant medicine. And that is a big theme out in the world with these medicines. And it has to do with lack of training, lack of regulation, lack of law. Also, it attracts predators who know that they can kind of get away with it. So it's scary.
Dr. Lily K. Ross, who co-hosted the podcast with Nichols, says there's also a culture of hostility to anyone who points out the problems.
The idea is we want to protect the movement. We want to protect the Renaissance. We want psychedelics to have the most beautiful, glimmering, alluring image possible because we're fighting against criminalization and we're trying to get these drugs legal. But the consequence of all of that is that here we are on the brink of legalization. This could be scaled up to millions and millions of people in the years ahead. And there are all of these really important ethical questions that simply have not been discussed, debated, and addressed. And that ultimately, the consequences of that will be borne by the people who are seeking healing.
Important discussions like what is and isn't ethical for the leader of a psychedelic group to do. And what's really a safe dose? There are studies that show that ayahuasca and other psychedelics can help heal sexual trauma and addiction, but some of those studies have been discredited. Ayahuasca has also been touted as a salve for depression. And Dr. McNary gets good feedback from clients at Rhythmia. But the problem with ayahuasca as a remedy for depression is you have to go off your SSRI medications for 30 days before and after a ceremony, which could be dangerous for folks struggling with their mental health. Fortunately for me, this night in the mountains is much more about communing with my ancestors and feeling at one with the world than any of the negative stuff. After 12 hours and at least as many purges, I drive home from my ayahuasca trip feeling more connected than I have in a long time. But less than 48 hours later, I find myself cracking jokes about the luminous man. My cynicism is back. So, who knows? Maybe I'll have to go back and do it all over again. For KCRW, I'm Courtney Kosak.
Special thanks to Michael Castaneda for his help with the sound design, as well as musicians Nestor Colmenares on flute, William Cordero on percussion, and Stefan Hoffman on handpan for selections from their songs, All One Nation.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
It's Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Kevin Roosevelt Moore hails from Compton, California. He's a guy whose voice and blues guitar playing you've no doubt heard, even if you don't recognize his name. That's because you might know him as Kevmo, a name he put on an album almost 30 years ago.
Angelina, baby, won't you please come home? Oh, sweet Angelina. Baby, won't you please come home?
In the intervening years, Kevmo has won 5 Grammys, topped the Billboard Blues chart a bunch of times, played at the White House. He's even had an acting career. Earlier this year, he put out his latest album called Good to Be.
Well, it looks to me like the end is coming. Feet hurt and my nose is running. Dropping like flies. Better cover your face, sanitize.
Tomorrow night, he's going to be performing at the Hollywood Bowl with Sheryl Crow. But first, he joins us here on Greater LA on KCRW. Kevmo, what's happening, man?
Nothing much. I'm just here hanging out with you. That's about as good as it gets.
I got to start with this, though. Where'd Kevmo come from? I mean, obviously, it's a variation of your name. But who planted that seed?
It was first planted on my block in Compton, California, when people would holler. You know, they would say, like, they call me Kev Mo. And then later on in life, you know, in my 30s, people start calling me Kev Mo again. And it just kind of stuck. So we figured out how to spell it. and it went there.
You're originally from Compton, as I mentioned. That probably isn't the first place that people think of when they think of Delta blues, right? They're thinking Mississippi, they're thinking, you know, Louisiana. How did you first get interested in playing that style of music?
Well, there was no first. It was like a long ramp up over many, many years. So I can't say there was got interested. I first got aware of my interest was in the late 80s, early 90s. That's when I got interested in it. But before that, it was chasing me around, trying to catch me. But I ran too fast and I outran it. Finally got to the place where I couldn't outrun it. And there I was playing it and loving it.
You played earlier in your career with Papa John Creech, the blues violinist that played with Jefferson Airplane, Hot Tuna. Did you meet him here in L.A.?
Yes, I did. Like I say, blues was chasing me around for years. It was fantastic. I cut my teeth in the music business, got to travel, go on the road, make albums. So Papa John Creech, in a sense, probably raised me from a pup. Then I went out and started playing gigs with other people. And I went on a journey of looking for myself, only to realize I probably found myself years ago and didn't know it.
Your first Kev Moe album came out in 1994. You played a couple of classic Robert Johnson songs on that album. He was a big early influence on you.
Yes.
How big? And what was it that got you so interested in his work?
Robert Johnson was sitting right there at the time I got into the blues. And his stuff was sitting right there. And I snatched and grabbed a hold of it. And also snatched and grabbed a hold of Robert Johnson, Big Bill Brunzy, Blind Willie McTell, and a whole bunch of other people I grabbed a hold of. But it seems that Robert Johnson got top bill because he's the father of the Delta Blues, and he's the most popular.
You left L.A. and went to Nashville. And that is a trek that quite a few people have done, musicians especially. Nashville is a big music town, not just country music, but pretty much every kind of music.
That is true.
What is it that's different about Nashville? I mean, is it just affordability? Is it camaraderie there?
It's a great sense of collaboration there. And also, you have to understand that every town is a music town. Every town's got a guitar store, a music store. It's got music school and people that can play their asses off. Because every community's got a church or something, and there's always got to be a piano player, an organ player. There's got to be somebody there to play in the local clubs. And there's always a boy wonder in that town that's kind of, or a girl wonder, you know, and that's killing it. So you pick your place and you go and you find your people. And that's what happened to me in Nashville. I went to Nashville. I found my people. I found my place. I found my house. And I began to set up camp there. Same it would be if I had went to Austin, if I had went to New York, if I had went anywhere else.
You have definitely broadened your musical palette over time. You've won Grammys for Best Blues Album, but your most recent Grammy was for Best Americana Album. First of all, what is Americana? And do you think of yourself still as a blues artist, or what does all that mean?
All those questions should be answered by people who are listening to me. I don't really concern myself with what kind of artist I am, and I haven't really grown that much. All I've done is peel back layers of things that I've been working on for years that I have in my...
Well, it's growing.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's growing. Yeah. So, if anything, I've shrunk.
I hope you shrunk.
Well, you know, I think in the 90s and in the late 80s, I might have been a much more prolific guitar player. Because I was really doing more things, and I was really exploring, really writing a thing, really trying out and seeing what I could do. Whereas now, like then when I became the Kev Moe kind of like started to kind of focus on what's Kev Moe? So I started doing what I thought the people Kev Moe ought to do. And then Kevin came in, I had a meeting with me and said, okay, Kev Moe, you remember who you are? Remember me, Kevin Roosevelt Moore, that dude? Well, you know, let's do some of that stuff too. So I just started adding in bits and pieces who I always was. And then that's perceived as like, now I'm growing. But I'm not really growing. I really shrank.
You want to play us something from your latest album?
I will play something from my latest album. How about that? Okay, this song is like, speaking of moving to Nashville, after moving to Nashville, I came back to California and visited my old neighborhood, you know, Compton, California, where I grew up. And my mother was, you know, in her demise, and she was getting her affairs in order, you know. And I bought the house that we grew up in, which had been a rental property since for maybe last 25 years, you know. So, and my wife and I, we remodeled it and put it back in order. So now it's a family home now. So while there, this is the song that became the title cut of the album. One, two, let's try it again. Back on the block, back in the hood, who would have known it would feel so good? Everybody I know done gone away, but the neighborhood is still the same. This is the place that made me strong. Got a whole lot of memories, I've been gone too long. It's good to be here, it's good to be anywhere. It's good to be back, good to be home again. It's good to be you, it's good to be me. Good to be young, good to be old. Good to be home again. I'm gonna hop in the car, go downtown, grab a bite, take a look around. Whole lot of things, you know, ain't what they used to be. I used to eat my fruit straight off the tree. My old barbershop still going strong, but it's too damn bad, my hair's all gone. It's good to be here, it's good to be anywhere. It's good to be back, good to be home again. It's good to be you, and it's good to be me. It's good to be young, good to be old. Good to be home again. Back in the saddle, back on my horse. Back in town, back to the source. It's good to be here, it's good to be anywhere. It's good to be back, good to be home again. It's good to be you, and it's good to be me. Good to be young, good to be old. Good to be home again. And it's good to be here, good to be anywhere. Good to be back, good to be home again. It's good to be you, and it's good to be me. Good to be young, good to be old. Good to be home again.
How's it feel to be back home, Cap Mo?
Feels really good, man.
Well, I know you're playing a show tomorrow night that's going to be incredible. You and Sheryl Crow at the Hollywood Bowl tomorrow night. Keb Mo, thanks for coming on, playing some music with us and talking to us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Man, makes me smile. It's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, a startup that offers fractional ownership of a house. Sounds like a timeshare, maybe? Some folks in Santa Barbara say that's exactly what it is, and they don't want it. Coming up tomorrow on GLA. Always online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. How are you doing? Maybe you have a story idea. Subscribe to the podcast too. All at our website, kcrw.com/greaterLA, and get the podcast wherever you get them. Zoe Matthew, Juliana Mayo, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Jay Siebold, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordall, all instrumental in this evening's episode. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thank you for your time and for your ears. Have a great night.